This is a Suno India production and you're listening to the Suno India Show. Hiba Ahmed lives in Kolkata, far from Karnataka, where girls and women are being asked to remove their hijab before entering schools. But watching and reading about these events gives her shivers.
I think the first initial reaction which I had when I read this was one of fear, because as someone who wears the hijab herself, not just in the city per se, so the first reaction was disbelief and a fear, like I said, that this is actually happening. And I think that was a very visceral thing which I felt, because the fear was something also which the college girls and the school girls were also feeling, those who had been disbarred from entry. So that was one thing.
Hiba is a PhD student from Jawaharlal Nehru University in Delhi. She's talking about videos that are doing the rounds where girls are fighting to enter college gates. In this video shared by the news reporter, the girls from Kundapura Government POC College are seen pleading with the principal to let them enter and not change the rules in the middle of the academic year. In just 2 months, we have exams, they pleaded. The hijab wearing girls are asking, should we worry about exams or this new rule against hijab that you have foisted upon us? In the meanwhile, some videos showing other students donning saffron scarves and headgear sometimes seen intimidating hijabi girls. There is a video of a student, Muskan, from Mandya district, who looked so scared when the student shouted at her that she started screaming, Allahu Akbar. This is her interview to BBC.
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar!
When I take Allah's name, I get courage. I don't stay. There is no humanity in those people. And they were saying, Jai Shri Ram, chale jao, burkha kaado, aise kuch bol rahe the.
Karnataka is in the middle of turmoil, as you can gather. And the Karnataka High Court is hearing a clutch of petitions filed by some of these hijabi students.
Does the wearing of the hijab or the headscarf constitute a fundamental right under the Constitution? Is the wearing of the hijab an essential religious practice? These two questions are being considered by the Karnataka High Court, which is hearing a batch of petitions filed by Muslim students challenging the hijab ban in their colleges.
The Karnataka High Court, in its interim order, restrained students, regardless of their faith, from wearing saffron shawls or scarves, hijab, or holding religious flags in the college premises. The High Court is yet to take a stand on the questions of whether banning a hijab is constitutional. Hi, I'm Menaka Rao, hosting this episode of the Suno India Show. This is the first in the two-part series on the hijab row in Karnataka. The issue is being debated at several levels now. One argument is just about the right to education for these girls. We will discuss this in greater detail in the second part of the series. The other side of the debate are the Hindutva forces that appear to fight against Muslim religious symbols. Liberal scholars have spoken against the wearing of hijab as a sign of Muslim conservatism and patriarchal practice. Famous activist Shabnam Hashmi took to Twitter to say, and I quote, "I am not safeguarding the right to wear hijab, period." She also wrote, and I quote, "Tomorrow I would be required to stand for women's right to ghoongat and day after dowry." In this show, we will be talking to Hiba Ahmed, the PhD student from Jawaharlal Nehru University, who strongly defends her right to wear a hijab. We also speak with Dr. Zina Chaukat Ali, a reputed scholar of Islamic studies, who retired from St. Xavier's College, Mumbai. She is also the founder of World Institute of Islamic Studies for Dialogue, Organization of Mediation and Gender Justice, or Wisdom Foundation. While Dr. Zinath regrets the way the issue has been politicized, she does not feel that wearing a hijab in school is a constitutional right. the Indian Muslims for Secular Democracy issued a press release that was signed by more than 150 secular human rights activists.
IMSD strongly condemned the attempt by Hindutva forces and the BJP government of Karnataka to engulf college and school campuses in the already raging communal fire in the state. At the same time, IMSD disagrees with the claim of the agitating Muslim girls that their demand is in conformity with the constitution-protected fundamental right to freedom of religion. While this may be a belief of the orthodox and patriarchal clerics, any number of modern-day Islamic scholars, men and women, rightly maintain that hijab has nothing to do with teachings of the Quran and the Prophet. The veil, in other words, is not mandatory in Islam.
Dr. Zenith, who is one of the signatories of this release, explains.
And I would like to talk over the politics of it first, is that, you see, minorities are on the downslide in the BJP government. Every time you look at it, it's the bully bai and the suli bai, and you see the love jihad, and you see the lynchings, and you see for every little thing, it is a Muslim issue that has come up, and this divide and rule policy that has come in is an extremely detrimental, dangerous thing that is happening in the country. And women, sometimes women's issues very often are sort of entangled, you know, they're brought in and entangled with political issues, which should not happen. So that is my first submission. We are a multicultural, multilingual. We have a great legacy. We have a wonderful legacy that no other country in the world enjoys. And we have been able to assimilate. We have been able to talk. We have been able. It's a pluralistic world. It's a pluralistic society. And our constitution gives us many, it gives us fundamental rights. A woman or a man in this country can dress the way they wish. If a woman wants to don a hijab or a woman wants to don a sari or a woman wants to don a dress, it is up to her. And there can be no vigilantism or moral policing on this subject. So a woman has the right to choose her wear, and if she chooses to use a particular kind of dress, she chooses it. Now, the problem which has become in this particular case has become one of a school and its uniform. Entire debate, it is simply about a school uniform, whether in a particular school you may wear the hijab in the whatever way you want or the burqa and come. And when you enter the school, you may enter, but you do not enter a classroom with that on. And I thought that was... there was nothing wrong with that. So, and at the same time, see that there has to be a debate, and there doesn't have to be heckling. You know, some people have told me that, you know, when we are seen in these kind of dresses, people have tried to attack us. They call us terrorists. And they call, now that is, you know, going to the other extreme. And that's what I'm saying, is that, you see, politics cannot enter into this kind of a debate. It just cannot. And which is unfortunate that it is taking this political color.
The governments and educational bodies should have tried to resolve this issue instead of fanning the divide, she said.
Now, the whole point is that was this necessary when we are talking about one side, you know, and what they are saying? The other side says, no, we are not going to allow girls to step in, and we are also going to come in saffron robe. So here you see the instead of understanding how to deal with the situation and resolve it, and find a solution, we are standing up against each other and saying, no, I am going to wear this and you are going to wear that. And this divisiveness that is coming to society now is going to step into schools. So, which I think is a very extremely sad state of affairs. It should not happen. It cannot happen.
Dr. Zenith says that wearing a hijab is about women having to preserve their culture and is linked to patriarchal traditions and clerical dictations.
As far as the hijab issue is concerned, you know, today in the ideological spectrum, it has encompassed a wide range of dimensions which feed into debates about preserving culture, the role of religion, national identity, to making political statements, and to gender inequality. And here also, you see, do we have to fight the battle in this way? There are many ways of understanding this. Hijab in India has been practiced over the years, and you find that young children who are brought up, you know, between patriarchal traditions and clerical dictations, and they're caught in between. So we have to understand how, the mindset that grows with that. That's one thing. And now they have, you know, they're being used as pawns to facilitate patriarchy. So this is an important aspect of where we are heading.
Dr. Zeenat wants to address the question, is hijab a mandatory garment for Muslim women?
One question that the judge asked was that, is the hijab an essential part of Islam? Now, when that question was asked, I was forced to pick up my pen because, you see, hijab was not introduced by Prophet Muhammad. I mean, in the way, first of all, the word hijab is a misnomer. It should not be used in this context. It's used 7 times in the Quran. And nowhere does it say that, you know, hijab is a clothing. It is used metaphorically in many different ways, but it is not used. It means that there's a hijab, a curtain. You know, it has been translated by Arab lexicon as a curtain, as a partition, as a distance created. But it's like, a, you know, the distance between good and evil, a curtain between good and evil, a curtain between the good people and the bad people.
She explains that the Prophet does talk about women dressing modestly.
Any particular kind of a dress was not prescribed. It was said that you dress modestly, you dress decently, and you cover yourself up. And there's no doubt about that, that these things were said.
Dr. Zeenat gives some historical context to hijab as an assertion of identity.
Around the 70s, you know, in Egypt, women stood up against British colonialism and wore this kind of an outfit as a mark of identity. That, you know, we want you out and you are those and we are this. It began with that. And you see, it. And today also, there are many women in the world who feel that this is, it is liberating for us. You know, we can wear this and we can go out and we can do this, that and the other. We can teach, we can become lawyers, but this is what we are. And the other side said that this is the patriarchal oppression. So between the two, you know, the entire concept of what is the word of God and what was the prophet saying and how he was bringing about reform is completely lost.
She says that as an Islamic scholar, one thing is clear, hijab is not mandatory for Muslim women.
What you are saying is mandatory. You know, today the point has become that this is mandatory and an essential of religion. That is something that I have not found in the religion, in the religious text. Because the religious texts are not talking about this. They're saying, yes, you cover yourself. Yes, you're decent. And I can quote you a dozen scholars on this, you know, who are saying the same thing as I am. And it has been a long research on my part for me to say this to you. You see, that is an open interpretation. And so why should you assert yourself in an institution where you can become in a classroom where you're sitting to learn mathematics? What has your hijab got to do with that? Or what has your saffron scarf got to do with that? Or what does wearing a cross or a cassock has to do with that? You tell me. So these are, you know, I think extremely narrow ways of, you know, of looking at things, but they are extremely broad ways of division. To my mind.
Hiba explains to me that her parents did not force her to wear the hijab.
I have not been wearing it since I was a child. My parents did not enforce it on me. And I studied in a school which, even though it was a private school, it was a convent school. But the uniform did not permit the wearing of hijab or anything else. And I never questioned that. So, but in college, in St. Xavier's College in Calcutta also, I did not wear it. Occasionally, I would. I think there was a time in my college life when I wore it, but I think the moment I would enter campus, I would feel so strange because I think I did not see any other hijab wearing Muslim woman inside St. Xavier's College. So I would take it off. I remember the moment I stepped inside the gate, or even before I stepped inside the gate, I would take it off. In Jadavpur University also, I did not wear it regularly. I don't think it was a fixture of my life then. I started wearing it after I came to JNU, which has a considerable, though a very small percentage of the total student body in JNU is Muslim. But there is a certain, though very less visibility of hijab-wearing Muslim women. And that is how I was encouraged to wear it. Because there was a part of me which wanted to wear it, but also I didn't want to feel strange and odd, like the odd one out. So in JNU, I wore it and then I wore it everywhere. But whenever I do go to university to meet my supervisor or to for any other, for library visits or wherever, or when I was staying inside the hostel before the lockdown, I would wear it for meal times or whatever. So it has been a part of my life and I didn't really think about it being a big hindrance or a big problem or anything like that, because it is something which has become so, it's like a second skin. So you don't really think about that you are doing it, because it becomes like a very naturalized part of your everyday existence. It is like seeped into the everyday. It is not something which is exceptional or something which is externally imposed on you.
She says that every person is shaped by influences around them. A hijab is not necessarily an imposition for Muslim women.
Yeah, yes, your agency is shaped by other people, of course. Why do we wear a particular shade of lipstick? Have we been influenced by certain cosmetic brands? Were we just influenced by an ad that we saw? Everything that we do is somehow or the other shaped by systems and by ideologies and by visual cultures. So where is this very rarefied, very, you know, this free will and choice, which is, you know, like you can erase it from everything, you know, like you're erasing like a piece of paper from its, like two sheets of paper. Like, okay, this is separate and this is separate. You can't do that. You can't separate like that. You can't erase like a sticker, like a cellophane or a sellotape. You can't do that. Every agency is steeped into a lot of systems which influence us. I was thinking about all the things which I have learned from my mother over the years, because hijab is something which everyone says that we are learning from our communities, we are learning from our religion. Yeah, but yes, how so many things that we learn from our communities, from our families, from our religion. I learned how to make biryani very recently. I swore I would never cook ever because I thought it's a very patriarchal thing to do. But then isn't that a ridiculous argument that you will never cook because cooking is patriarchal? That's a reductionist argument. So like cooking biryani or, you know, eating rice or one of those very normal everyday things that we do, wearing hijab is also something which is very an essential part of the everyday. So everyday that you don't even think that it's an anomaly. That is where I think the difference between the perspective of hijab wearers and the state comes in. We see it as something which is extremely ordinary, part of the everyday, you know, like something which you just wear. Like, for example, when I'm going out, I make sure that I have a handkerchief and I also make sure that my head is covered. So it's like I do it without even thinking, like a reflex, you know, but the state is saying a lot of things, and that I want to talk about that the state thinks it's an anomaly. The liberal class, which has a very ambiguous attitude to the hijab, the liberal civil society, which says that, okay, I support your right to education, but I don't support your right to hijab because it is, you know, indoctrination of religious values, etc. I don't agree with them. Because they are the ones who see it as an anomaly, as something strange, as something which has been, you know, a garment which shows that you have been brainwashed. But that is not true at all. If you walk in any muhalla, in any Muslim neighborhood, and I would request these liberal intellectuals to actually do that. Khan Market is not a Muslim muhalla. So maybe come out of that. You will be able to see a lot of Muslim girls, adolescents, women, I mean, women of all ages wearing the hijab. It's that common. And just go to Shaheen Bagh. And that is what I want to tell the state, the civil society, the High Court, and the Saffron Shawl agitators who want to make Muslim women take off the hijab and only then enter the classroom spaces. This is an infringement. And this is an artificial dichotomy which has been created between the right to education and the right to freedom of religion. And there is no dichotomy in the constitution. Just because I am choosing to do something which the religion mandates me to do doesn't mean that my free will, that my choice, my subjectivity is completely erased. No, it's not. The whole idea of women wearing the hijab, the reason why it's an everyday practice is because, yes, they have consciously adopted to do it. When I decided to wear the hijab some years ago, when I was studying in JNU, it was a choice. It was definitely a very consciously thought of choice.
I asked Iba if the High Court is asking the right question, whether hijab is an essential garment for Muslim women. She agrees that this should not be a point of contention.
If there is discrimination against Muslim women by making the hijab a central point of the whole, by making the hijab the bone of contention, the argument simply is that you allow them to permit the classroom, to enter the classroom. You allow them to do that. You don't go into debates which are unnecessary and which do not help the cause of justice. Debates, namely, about whether hijab has religious backing, whether it is essential to Islam. These questions need not be asked. And these questions do not promote the cause of justice. They do not promote the cause of education of the disenfranchised and oppressed communities.
Dr. Zeenat says that the government and the High Court have an unenviable task ahead of them.
In India, particularly in a polarized atmosphere of religion, you see, everything has taken a certain shape in people's minds. Everything has a certain shape. And that shape of things that have been taken is religious. You see, has become very anti each other. You know, and if I'm sorry to say that, the present dispensation has created this divide. So now what happens is that if a girl is wearing, normally if you would wear a headscarf and go around, nobody would even think twice. But today it is associated with a kind of a religion. And therefore, you see, if other people say that if she can wear this, then I can wear that. That has become the question. So you see, when we say that, yes, in educational institutions, you see, the atmosphere then will become, what do you think will happen? The girl will come in a hijab and continue her education, excellent. The boys will say, and the other girls will say, now we are going to wear the saffron robes and we are going to come. So what kind of education are you acquiring? Because inside the class is going to be this line drawn between these factions. You see, inside the classroom, you will have this bad feeling. How are you going to deal with it? Education means enlightenment. It means self-improvement. That is what the word means. To get the best out of yourself, that is educare. Now, where are we heading with this? Because it's not going to stop with the hijab now. Because the other community is saying that this is also, this is our dress, which we have not asserted over the years, but now we want to assert it. Now tell me, what is your answer to that? Is it going to benefit? Is it going to benefit the girls in the hijab who enter? Is it going to help them in their education? Or is it going to alienate them? Or is it going to make them more apartheid? Because understand that if you are 12%, you're dealing with a majority. So you have to exercise your better common sense as to where you're heading and what you're doing.
Irrespective of all these arguments, I think one thing everyone agrees on is that the Muslim girls are stuck here and they are being asked to deal with a problem far bigger than what they should be dealing with at their age. This is Hiba.
I don't think I can even imagine what those students are going through right now. I mean, there was this one student, I think I was reading her testimony online. She's just 18. We are forgetting how extremely vulnerable they are. They are in that position of life, where they're just finishing school. I mean, I think of all the things which they could have been doing if they were not, so intimidated right now by this very artificial and very unnecessary drama which everyone has done in Karnataka. They could have been, that's what they should be doing. That's what they should be allowed to do. Have the freedom to go to school unhindered. And it's very unfortunate that they are not being able to.
Please rate our podcast and leave a comment if you like it. Underreported and underrepresented stories can become mainstream only if it reaches more people. So please support us by visiting a contributing page on our website sunoindia.in or follow us on Facebook, Twitter or Instagram.